Welcome to The Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Phoenix Rising family, our losing streak is over, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. We're not exactly in winning territory, but the juggernaut that is Phoenix Rising is moving in the right direction. A draw against our rivals Orange County on July 2nd wasn't what we wanted because we always want to win, but it was an exciting game and we had a fantastic night cheering on the boys. Tayo Mackey and Kelly McCarthy are with me for the game roundup. Later in the show, John Morrissey joins us for his weekly segment on news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. And following that, we'll preview our next game, which is against Memphis 901. I was surprised to find two names on our opponent's roster that Rising fans will be familiar with. I'm excited to share them with you, so stick around for that. Devin Kerr will be with us on the podcast next week, so that's one to circle on your calendar, but right now it's over to Tayo and Kelly. Enjoy the show, and thank you for spending your time with us.
This is Rick Shantz, the head coach of Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Saturday the 2nd of July, Phoenix Rising took on rivals Orange County Soccer Club in Phoenix. It was the first time Phoenix played Orange County this season, and this would be the first time out of a total of 17 games that Phoenix ended a game with a draw. Both teams ended with two goals. I'm delighted to welcome two regulars to the show to discuss the game, Kelly McCarthy, our resident analyst, and Tayo Mackey, sports journalist who covers Phoenix Rising FC for the Arizona Republic. Before we get into the details, I've got a public service announcement, which is that it's proven that listening to this pod with a friend is exponentially better than listening alone. So if you can, grab a friend to listen along. If you don't have a friend on hand, share this episode with them. Episode 63 of The Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Guys, before we get to the game, let's reflect on the experience at the game last night. It was 102 degrees at kickoff, a contender for the hottest game of the season. Tayo, how were these conditions for the boys on the field?
I don't know. I think they got maybe a little bit tired at points late in the game, but so did Orange County. I don't think it affected them anymore. I mean, they're more used to it, right, than any other team. They practice in it every day. So I don't think it affected them too much. I will get into it, but I think Rick often uses the weather as an excuse. And I don't know. I think there are a lot of places in this league that have worse weather than Phoenix, especially given that they get to train in it every day.
Sure. Well, Kelly, I was happy at least that we were under the shade of the night sky. How was it for the fans in the stands?
It was okay. I mean, we sit in a lovely section, but it's a little overcrowded. So yeah, we were feeling the sweat, but you know, those lovely like rally towels that they give you, they can really help mop the sweat. I also find if you're wearing really short shorts, sitting on them can help things out. So we find the workarounds.
A hot tip. Kelly, I'm going to stay with you. I'd love it if you'd kick us off by setting the stage for us.
Absolutely. So Phoenix Rising fans know the dire situation the club is in moving into this match. The team has a losing record of 7-9, having lost 4 of their last 5 matches. And that statistic kind of gets worse if you go back beyond their last 5 matches. But those 4 losses were in a row. And kind of stringing together 4 losses isn't something Phoenix has done since 2016, when they were known as Arizona United. So, you know, as tough as these losses are, they're made worse by the fact that some of these teams that we've lost to were not even that good, such as Loudoun United and Las Vegas Lights. And then, of course, some of these losses are happening at home, with the team having kind of an average record of 5-4 at Wild Horse Pass. So that's pretty tough to swallow as well. Taking a look at Orange County, the one consolation prize is they're not that good either. Just kidding. What I mean to say is they're not doing that well this season either. Like Phoenix, their season has been riddled with injuries from really players from all parts of the pitch that they value. They're in 12th place in the standings, and they suffered a midweek loss to San Diego. So we can only hope that they're moving into this match defeated and exhausted. That said, they've got two players who are standing out and are likely full of confidence. You've got Milan Ilaski and a new goalkeeper, Colin Schuttler. So both made the USL team of the week last week, or now 2 weeks ago in week 16. And one of Milan Ilaski's two goals from that match, which was against Loudon, was up for goal of the week. Schuttler, interestingly, he was recruited from USL League One side, North Texas SC. And most Phoenix Rising fans will remember that OC also recruited Ronaldo Damas from North Texas. And they're sort of looking for a star to turn their season around in that new goalkeeper. Notably, the season is about to get harder for Phoenix after this match. You have Memphis 901 and Louisville both on the road in the next two matches. That's your number two and number one team in the East, respectively. So Phoenix needs to dig really deep to find their confidence and, I guess, their moxie and sort of right this ship. No pressure.
Awesome. And Tao, what about you? What's on your radar coming into this game?
It feels so weird in game 17 of a 34-game season, and I think it's an overused cliche, but it felt somewhat close to a must-win game, if not for the team, for Rick, because every week except for one over basically the past 2 months, but really every week for the past month, he's been faced with, entered the week with questions about his job, and he hasn't been able to point to anything because he's been coming off a loss. So Orange County coming to town, second worst team in the USL, at home with two really, really hard road trips coming up. Like, it felt like just to relieve some of the pressure and go into a week where he doesn't have to be answering questions about his job security and can instead talk about the team. It felt like a really important game for him to get a win and relieve that pressure.
And I felt that from the fans as well, that they all thought that it was a really important game for us. And the fans really showed up, not only showed up in the stands, but showed up with their voices. So guys, before we get to the game highlights, let's take a look at the starting 11. Phoenix Rising were back to their 4-3-3 formation with Ben Lunt in goal. On the left fullback spot, you had Babacar Jai, his counterpart on the right side, Darnell King, the center back pairing, James Musa and Joey Farrell. Moving up into midfield, in a defensive midfielder role, you had Kev Lambert, and then the two midfielders, Aidan Quinn and Cozy Donaciano. Up front, our three forwards on the left side, on the left wing, Santi Moore, over on the right, Joey Calistri, and then in the center, our striker, Greg Hurst. Kelly, what did you think of this lineup? Were there any surprises?
I don't know about surprises really at this point. I mean, your formation there is a 4-3-3, which is a welcome sight after, you know, sort of playing with three center backs last match against Las Vegas. You see Donaciano in the midfield, and he was sort of lax last week. So that was notable, especially we found out at some point that Cejas was fit and able to play, but just didn't make it into the lineup due to some kind of administrative error, a typo on the roster, apparently. So that was interesting and a little unfortunate. And you don't see Marcus Epps. I believe he was on the injury list, which accounts for his absence in the lineup, but you're definitely missing him. You know, he felt like maybe he was sort of turning it up in the last match. And I was really looking forward for him to get increased minutes and continue to see, you know, what he's capable of and what he was recruited to bring to this team. So I don't know if that was a surprise, but certainly a disappointment. And then you've got Antwi and Repetto on the bench. Definitely looking forward to seeing what they can produce. And I guess, sorry, why don't I just go through the whole lineup and comment? But something I really did think was, okay, looking forward to seeing what our new player, I'm going to say Johnny, and anyone please correct my pronunciation if that's wrong, but I'm looking forward to sort of meeting him and seeing what he brings to the party.
Tale, Kelly just mentioned there Luis Manuel Cejas, our Venezuelan, that he wasn't on the roster and he wasn't on the injured list. She said it was because of a typo. Can you speak to that?
Oh, I don't know necessarily typo. Rick said after the game that it was a clerical mistake, which sounds to me like they basically forgot to put him in the team. It was just an accident. Which I guess means, at least if you take that on its face, that, you know, whatever rumors of him being gone may not necessarily be true. But at the same time, if it is true, a clerical mistake, really? Like, that's not, that's just so unprofessional. And I wrote this in one of my stories this weekend. Like, this club has been built on being professional. In 2017, 18, 19, 20, even last year, like they stood out in a league where a lot of teams are unprofessional for their professionalism, really good facilities, good coaching, everything done at a professional standard. And Rick talks about that a lot. And then earlier this month, the way that they let Jonathan Levin go, and it was mentioned as a footnote in a press release, no posts on social media for a fan favorite. That was unprofessional. And then now a player is left out of the team due to a clerical mistake, certainly unprofessional. So I think that's a worrying sign that there's been a lack of professionalism this season, combined with what we've seen on the field, combined with the controversy off the field. Things aren't going very well right now at this club.
Okay, well, we're certainly hoping that things will look better after the starting whistle. So let's get right into it, guys. In the first half, well, in the very first minute, Babacar Jai fouled one of the OC players, resulting in a free kick on the right side of the park, just outside the box. This created a tense moment for everyone in attendance at Wild Horse Pass. The ball was sent to the back post to one of the OC players who was open. He wasn't able to control the ball, and after a few touches, a problem was averted. However, 5 minutes into the game, OC won the ball in midfield and passed it straight down the center to Orange County's forward, Milan Alosky, who had his back to goal. He turned, took a few steps forward, and 20 yards from goal, he let it rip low and hard, sending it across his body into the bottom left corner of the goal. So we're down 1-0, 5 minutes in. Tale, what was your take on this play?
My take on it was that the defenders didn't, I don't remember exactly who it was. I think Musa kind of got pulled up weirdly out of position. I'm not sure exactly what he was doing. And then I think it was Babacar Jai and Joey Farrell. Could be wrong on that. But those two just backpedaled and backpedaled and backpedaled. And they kept giving Ilioski space because he got the ball 40 yards from goal or so. And he was kind of cornered. If they stepped to him, okay, maybe he beats the two of them on the dribble and threw one-on-one. That seems pretty unlikely. So step to him, shut down the attack. Maybe he has to play it away. Maybe he tries to beat you on the dribble. Instead, they backpedal for 20 yards, and he basically gets a free shot. There were two defenders there, and they didn't really do a whole lot of anything. So that was pretty poor. And Rick had mentioned after the game, it wasn't in relation in reference to this play specifically, but he said that he was unhappy with the distance between the defense and the midfield. And this felt like one of those plays.
Absolutely. Well, Phoenix responded quickly. And over the next 10 minutes, we saw attempts on goal from Cozy and from Kev Lambert. OC then took control, winning three corners in the next 10 minutes. And then at the 30th minute mark, OC midfielder Kevin Partida, he picked up a yellow for a foul on Phoenix's Cozy Donaciano. From there, Phoenix started to gain confidence and maybe take control. We saw shots on goal from Hurst, from Cozy himself, and from Khalid history. And the closer we got to halftime, the more we could feel that a goal was imminent. It arrived in the 42nd minute. Aidan Quinn had the ball in the center circle. He sent the ball high to the right corner of the box to Darnell King. King chested it down and, getting past his defender masterfully, he dribbled toward goal. He centered the ball, which bounced off an OC defender, went past the goalie and solidly into the OC net. It's 1-1. It's the 42nd minute. Kelly, how did you like that play?
I loved this play. And, you know, I think we definitely want to give a shout out to Aidan Quinn. I thought he had a really nice match. And this was kind of an example of that. You know, his service was on point. You know, this is kind of how Aidan Quinn's experience shows up. He really knows where his players are. He's got great communication. And I mean, his placement was just beautiful. So, definitely hat tip to Aidan Quinn. And then you mentioned that King masterfully got past his defender. You know, definitely a good setup for this, for us to talk about this goal, but it wasn't really that masterful. I mean, he just uses his strength, he uses his speed, and he's not scared to dribble. And that's a little bit of what we need to see from the team at this point, is people who are effective on the ball. That's a little bit missing, and maybe we'll get into that in a little bit, but it was nice play. It was nice speed. It was good strength. And then it was a nice cross into the middle. You know, people were there. Greg Hurst was ready to tap this in, but he didn't need to. Thank you, OC. So it was great. And like you said, we were definitely feeling the pressure build. And for me, that's something that's kind of a tale of this half. We really don't get our legs under us until about the 30th minute. And I think that's notable. You know, you guys talked about that first goal. And I think one of the things we need to do is like be on more quickly. You know, Phoenix Rising gets down with those early goals and then takes forever to get their legs under them and to get their confidence. So it's a little bit too late at the point in the match where we're ready to start looking our best. But nonetheless, it's a great goal. And I really feel confident we would have gotten it, whether or not it was an own goal. IOC.
Over to you, Teo.
I think Kelly pretty much hit on everything. I think it's easy to dismiss an own goal as like, Phoenix didn't really do much there. But it was really, really well done by Darnell. That ball where the ball's coming over his left shoulder, he's looking up at it, and he's able to, in full speed, without breaking his stride, chest it down exactly. I mean, that's a really, really difficult ball. It's not a difficult ball to control. It's a difficult ball to control in stride at full speed like he did. That's really, really, you know, challenging to do. And it made it really hard on the defender. If he has to come to a stop, bring it down to his feet, and then attack the defender one-on-one, this goal doesn't happen. The Orange County defense resets. But he's able to do everything at such a speed that the defense isn't set, and that leads to the mistake, which still the defender should have been able to clear it. But it put them under pressure, and it was really well done by Darnell.
Thank you, Teo. Okay, so the pressure kept on building from Phoenix. 3 minutes into stoppage time in the first half, Aidan Quinn came close with a shot from a few yards out from the OC goal. OC then went on the counterattack and came even closer to a goal. OC's goal scorer Milan Lasky broke toward the Phoenix goal, passed it off to his teammate Eric Torres, who took a shot, but James Musa was there with the block. That brings us right up to halftime. The score is 1-1. Kelly, how are you feeling at halftime?
Well, I mean, you're walking on eggshells at halftime. I think I just mentioned, you know, I felt like the first 30 minutes of play were a little bit rough, you know, particularly the defense seemed really timid. They seemed scared, like they were, you know, scared about making a mistake. And this just causes sloppy play with too many balls being given away. You know, Teo talked about this, and maybe Shantz talked about it as well, but there's just that failure to commit and to close those players down defensively. This is where you see a lack of confidence in the team, and that is not good for anyone. You know, when you aren't sure what the best move is to make, you just don't do anything and you're frozen. So, you know, I think we were feeling that in the first half. I also, you didn't mention it, Niall, but in stoppage time in that first half, I felt like Joey Farrell came really close to pulling a player down in that breakaway. That's something else that comes with a lack of confidence, is this poor decision-making, especially from your defense. So you're not feeling great, but the last 15 minutes were a little bit better. You know, in the entirety of the half, Phoenix Rising had 58% possession, had 186 passes. You can see we're trying to play our game. There's only six shots on goal. It's not terrible. You've got four corner kicks in that half. So things are starting to develop and we're looking a little bit more confident as we're moving into the tunnel. So you certainly feel like anything can happen, and that's what you're hoping for in that second half.
Teo, how are you feeling at halftime and what were you expecting moving into the second half of the game?
I felt mixed. Like, I didn't think it was a bad performance. But again, it just felt short of what you wanted to see coming into the game, which was them to dominate, be up 2-0 at halftime, and never really look like dropping points.
Awesome. OC came out strong in the second half, winning two corners and earning a goal from one of those. It came in the 52nd minute. The corner is taken from the right side of the field. The ball goes up over the heads of everyone in the box. It's won by Milan Olaski on the back post, who, on a half volley, whips the ball toward the near post. The ball hits the underside of the crossbar and ricochets into goal, leaving the Phoenix defenders in pieces. Kelly, what are your thoughts on what happened defensively during that corner?
I'm not really sure exactly what happened. I mean, in real time watching it, it felt like Milan Olaski was just alone by the back post, which is a problem. Your back post should not be undefended. Milan Olaski should not be undefended. Rewatching it, I feel like this might have been sort of the strategy of their set play. You know, he's kind of near Musa initially when they're set up, and he sort of backs away slowly. All of the OC runners run towards the near post, and that just leaves him alone and exposed. So I don't know if it was very clever or if it was unfortunate, but you do feel like there's just some defensive fundamentals missing here for Phoenix Rising. Mark your back post, mark Milan Olaski in the box.
Teo, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're right. It was an intentional, you know, part of their set piece was for him to drift toward the back post. Yeah. But I mean, that's not particularly uncommon, having a guy, you know, curl around to the back post on a corner kick. Usually you have, you know, at least five or six runners know the routes that they're taking. And so Musa, or I actually didn't see whoever it was tracking him, needs to be on that and needs to make sure you're closing him down. And then even worse, once he gets free at the back post, okay, you lose a marker, or he loses his marker. That happens. But there are like three dudes there just standing kind of flat footed. You need to be sprinting at him full speed, throwing your body at him, realizing, okay, he's wide open here. He's going to control it and he's going to rip a half volley. Nobody stepped to him. And I don't remember who it was. You might remember. Who it was on the near post, just kind of stood there, and then the ball slammed off his head and into the goal. Did you see who that was?
I think
I remember Darnell King was there, and I think Musa was there as well.
I'm not sure. Darnell King looks kind of tripped up by a defender or by an attacker in the box. It might have been Babu on the front post, just kind of stood there and covered the post, but like really he wasn't covering much of the goal at all, and it would have been far more effective if he had closed, because I timed it from the time Olaski controlled it to when he shot was a second and a half, and the space that he had to shoot wasn't reduced at all. Like, in the penalty area, a second and a half to shoot is a ridiculous amount of time. So somebody needs to be closing him down and forcing him to pick out a corner, trying to get a block, something, because it was way too easy for him.
Agreed. And I mean, this reminds me of the Vegas game with Cal Jennings, and maybe it's too rudimentary, but my point then, and my point again with Olasky is like, can we just assign someone to watch this guy? I mean, I don't think that's inappropriate. Like, this is now your leading goal scorer in our league.
So certainly on corners, there should be extra attention toward him.
Yeah.
In the run of play, I mean, on that first goal, I don't think it was necessarily that he was unaccounted for.
Yeah.
I think it was just a lack of aggression on the part of Phoenix's defense.
Yep.
It happened again on the second goal off the corner.
And happened throughout the first half. I know we're moved into the second half, but that's kind of my point talking about the timidity, if that's a word, of the defense. It's like, you know, we're overcompensating. Maybe we got too many red cards and now everyone's concerned about being overly aggressive, but like, it's the name of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, that goal is followed by three more shots on goal from Orange County with former Rising player Ivan Gutierrez coming really close on one of them. Then some substitutions happened. In the 60th minute, there was a substitution. Lamin Jaunet, he replaces Cozy Donaciano. In the 75th minute, there's another Phoenix Rising substitution where Ryan Flood comes on for Babacar Jai. And then on the Orange County side, just in the 77th minute, Seth Kasipley replaced Kevin Partida. And Kevin Partida, that's a name we're going to hear again, despite him just leaving the field. Anyway, we'll get on to the game. The corner, Phoenix wins a corner. Aidan Quinn takes it on the left side. He's going for the far post. Lambert connects with the header, directs it to goal, requiring an incredible save by the OC goalie. The excitement continued to build as he lost the ball, leading to 30 seconds of attack on the OC goal with a shot from Santi Moore that was blocked and another by Ryan Flood. A minute later, Aidan Quinn and OC's Thomas McCabe get into a tussle off the ball. Both teams get involved in the pushing and shoving, resulting in two yellows for Phoenix, one for Aidan Quinn and another for Claudio Repetto. On the Orange County side, Michael Orozco gets a red for putting his hands on Repetto's neck. And Kevin Partida, who's on the bench, he gets a yellow. This is his second yellow. So both of them get early showers. There's 12 minutes to go. Orange County are short a center back, who's also their captain. Kelly, how are you feeling with 12 minutes to go and one man up?
Well, it was certainly exciting, you know, you gotta love a good tussle. But Phoenix Rising doesn't sort of classically do that well or necessarily much better when they're up a man. I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast before. It's like, hey, have you guys practiced when there's an extra? For a minute there, we thought they had two extra players. We were like sitting there counting because of course the two red cards, that would have been lovely. But yeah, I mean, I think tensions are just running really high. I wasn't necessarily feeling like this was going to turn the tides. You know, when you're up a player, it can be confusing. It can mean a shift in strategy that you're not necessarily that well prepared for. And also it's just like the expectations are so much higher that it can be hard to convert. So I'm excited. Phoenix historically does well with less minutes in the match. We tend to turn it up. We also can do well in stoppage time. So it feels like this is going to be our opportunity to get a goal. Absolutely. What you really want are two.
Right, guys, let's fast forward a little bit into the 89th minute. There was a corner. James Musa went up. He connected with the header, but it was saved. That brings us to the 90th minute. Phoenix makes two substitutions. Sievert Hogley came on for Joey Calistri, and the big one, Richie Antwi, our striker, known to his friends as Richie Rocket, came on for James Musa. 2 minutes into stoppage time, Darnell King had a shot on goal. It was high over the bar. He'll be kicking himself for that. Then 2 minutes later, that's 4 minutes into the game, Ryan Flood had the ball in midfield. He drew defenders to him, making space for King on the right wing. Flood played it off to King, who passed it forward to Lambert in the half space to the right of the box. Lambert quickly passed it to Richie Antwi, who dribbled toward the center. The fans were promised fireworks on this 4th of July weekend, and they were about to get it. 20 yards, out from goal in traffic. Antwi winds up, puts his laces through the ball, blasting it into the bottom right corner of the goal. The goalie's head spins as he watches the ball rocket past. He knows there's no way he's getting a hand to it. Teo, what do you think of that?
It was a heck of a strike. And they really, really needed it. Yeah, it was just a really nice individual play.
Kelly, thank you, Richmond Antwi.
Absolutely. Hey, do his friends really call him Richie Rocket, or did you just make that up?
No, the players call him that, apparently. That's what Rick said.
He said that is definitely something Niall would make up. So no, that means it's not the best nickname.
I guess it's because of his shooting ability. I guess they call him Richie Rocket.
There you go. Well, it was in full effect. I mean, I thought this was a really nice play. You know, definitely great vision by a great communication, first of all, with everyone. But I thought very good vision for Lambert. You know, he does a really good, a great job controlling that ball and getting it to Antwi. And then I also really liked Lambert's movement off the ball. You know, he quickly makes a run as soon as he releases that ball and draws some defenders with him. And stuff like that is so important. You know, it's what you do off the ball that can make that space and time for your teammates. And it is a rocket. I mean, damn it. He earned the nickname for sure. He also does a little bit of a feint, you know, like he's going to go in one direction before turning and moving with the ball. He drops his shoulder, like he's going to fake a shot before he takes an extra touch. And I mean, yeah, as Teo said, it's a great individual effort, definitely nickname earning.
It's 2-2. We're into the dying minutes of the game. Quinn has a throw in to Moore on the left side of the box. Moore sends it into the box, looking for a head, specifically looking for Repetto. It's a little too high for him, but Lamine Jaune is on the other side of the box. He catches it on the half volley, and we wished that it was going towards goal, but unfortunately it was up and over the bar, putting the final score at 2-2. So, let's talk about our thoughts on that second half. And so, Teo, over to you for your thoughts on the second half.
Fine. Like, it was okay. But as I said before the game, like, they really needed to win this game, and a point just isn't good enough. It's when you're on a 4-game losing streak, a point, I guess, feels good because it's finally something. But a point against Orange County at home with the difficulty of the schedule in the next 2 weeks, it's just not enough.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So, guys, let's get in and talk about how our team did on each part of the field. Kelly, I'm going to start with you. How about the defenders? Were there any highlights? Were there any disappointments in our defensive unit?
No real highlights for me. As I mentioned, I thought they were a little too timid. They did get better as the match went on. So that's something. That's something. And, you know, most of them had decent numbers in terms of passing and passing accuracy, in terms of the duels that they won. King is actually notable for his, in my mind, for his poor passing accuracy. I think he was at about 57% accuracy. That's over 30 passes in the match. That's 52% in the opponent's half. But I don't really fault him because I do think he was pretty instrumental in our attack. You know, he really made some efforts to move forward. We just talked about him in terms of that own goal for OC. Would never have happened without him. Great ball control. So I also thought, you know, Musa looked a little sloppy at times, but he made some key plays as well, redeeming himself. He had a beautiful header on goal. And he had a key sort of sliding save. Otherwise, I think OC would have had another goal up on us. So, you know, a bit mixed in terms of those who played not great, but also had some key moments. And as I mentioned, I just think in general, the defense needs to be more aware of dangerous players. I just think that's something that's really missing. You know, we heard that, Niall, you had Darnell King on the podcast early in the season, and he really talked about how he doesn't pay a ton of attention to other players in the league, and that's fine. And I don't pin that on him, but in general, I think having some awareness, having some more game IQ, who are we playing? Who are the players we need to be watching? Sometimes it feels like that's missing.
Let's move it up to midfield. How did our midfield do, Teo?
I don't know. Okay, I guess. What was the possession number?
We actually had more possession.
Yeah, that's what it felt like, 55% possession.
Yeah.
But not a ton of chance creation until late on. So the chances were basically Darnell's really nice one-on-one play on the first goal. Antwi's really nice individual moment on the second goal. So both of those were very individual. And then a pair of corners that we talked about that led to the headers for Lambert and Musa. Outside, and then in the 95th minute, the chance for Jana. But there wasn't much in the way of the team creating a really good chance. And that's on the midfield. They need to be better in terms of creating chances from the run of play that aren't individual moments. The types of plays we saw last year, where it's the team working a really, having a really nice move, working the ball into a dangerous position and creating opportunities for the strikers. They had one that actually in the first half, it didn't end in a shot, but they had a really nice sequence. I think Quinn ended up playing it through to Hurst, who miscontrolled it. And that was like the one time where it was like, the midfield was actually creating something, working together. Although I will give credit to Quinn for his ball over the top to King on the first goal.
Great, great. Kelly, just want to talk about one of the substitutions. It was the first time that we'd seen Lamine Jaune. So Lamine is with us on a 25-day contract, and this is the first time that he's taken the field. He came on in the 60th minute. How did he do?
You know, I liked him quite a bit. I hesitated there for a moment, and I don't have his statistics on hand. They're not that impressive. You know, I don't think we saw a ton from him, but for whatever reason, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I got a really good impression of him. I mean, you talked about that missed half volley shot of his at the end, but it was a good effort. And I really felt like he was extremely passionate. He was, I hate to say trying his hardest because that equals nothing, but I really felt like he came out blazing. He did not look like when we were introduced to Donaciano, you know, he just kind of was absent for a few games when he was on the pitch. You really didn't feel his presence. And I felt differently about Jaune. I thought he really was willing to do whatever it takes. He felt integrated into the team. He had confidence about him. So two thumbs up from me. Looking forward to seeing more. Like, you want to see him back on the pitch. I feel like he can make things happen.
I thought so too. He certainly passed the eye test for me. So yeah. Guys, Phoenix Rising will play Orange County again on the 12th of August. So it's a little more than a month away, and we've got a lot going on between now and then, especially with our trips to the East Coast. So Teo, over to you for some closing comments.
It's not a good situation, right? Like, do you see them getting a point in Memphis or Louisville? Because right now I don't.
And, yeah, I think that's the best we can hope for.
And then you're right now you're 4 points off the playoffs. So if you lose both of those games, you can imagine that by that point you'll probably be 6-7 points off the playoffs, somewhere around there. Like, that's kind of concerning. That's 15 games to make up a lot of points, and it's certainly possible. But man, I think they're about a 50% chance to make the playoffs right now, maybe lower. And I don't know. Obviously, the discussion that everyone wants to have is what in relation to Rick's job. And my stance on this is kind of two-sided. Like, on one hand, I think that the odds of them turning around the season with Rick are fairly low. He's tried everything with this group, and maybe something will click, but my read right now, my guess right now, is that things aren't going to work out for this group. So you can say, okay, we want to save this season. We want to get rid of him. And we want to, because right now they're alienating fans with their performance there. You know, it's concerning. So you can say, okay, let's get rid of him, try to turn it around for this season, which is what Orange County did last year. They had a bad start, fired their coach, turned it around, won the league. It's possible. On the other hand, you can say, look, this guy's been a really good manager for 4 years. Phoenix has been one of the best teams in USL. And for over that stretch, they've had more points than anyone else. He clearly knows what he's doing. This group just isn't the right mix. It's not working out. We might not make the playoffs this year, but that's okay. We'll give him another chance next year to get new players in and find the right mix. And I understand that side of the coin. Like, in European soccer, there's very short leashes for managers, and there's so much pressure because of the money at the top end of the table, the money of Champions League places at the bottom end of the table, the threat of relegation. Here, there's not that. Like, they can miss the playoffs and everything would be okay. Like, they'd be able to start next season and have the same ambitions of winning a championship. So it's perfectly understandable to say, yeah, you know, we're going to reward Rick for having 4 good years and try this again in the off season. But I think it's getting to a point where if you want to win this season, you have to make a move.
Great comments. Just want to follow up on that you mentioned about Orange County, about Richard Chaplow taking over mid-season last year and was able to do fantastic things. And, you know, they ended up with a winning season. They won it all at the end. But this year, they're not doing well at all. They're below us on the standings. And then just to contrast that with Sacramento Republic, Sacramento Republic had a very bad season last year. They didn't make the playoffs. They didn't fire their coach. They kept him on. And he's having a pretty fantastic season, especially when you look at how they're doing in the Open Cup, taking down 3 MLS teams already. They've had a win streak. It was at least four wins out of the last 5. So it's always tough, and there are always 2 sides to the story when you're looking at the coach, especially when you're looking at how well Rick has served us over the last 4 years. So we'll see what happens. It's interesting times. Yeah, Kelly, over to you for some closing comments. Unless you want to jump back in.
Yeah, let me just jump back in. I mean, I think that kind of illustrates my point. Like, Sacramento kept their manager and they couldn't turn around last season. That's okay. That's one option. And it's served them well this year. But as I said, if you want to win this year, something has to change because it's not working with this group. I don't know exactly what the cause is, trying to figure that out. But yeah, something's not clicking right now. And I think you need a new manager to fix that. I'm not saying Rick should go. I'm saying if you want to turn around this season, you need a new manager to fix it.
Interesting thoughts. Kelly, over to you for some closing comments.
Now I'm so confused. I agree with both of you and both sides. And I think it is a really difficult decision. And I think it's interesting too, you know, just to throw some more confusion in it. This is a lot of the team that we had last season when we were so successful, you know, so it's not like a matter of just Rick either. You know, it does have to do with performance. And I think the difference between a good team and a great team, especially at this level, is confidence and is momentum. These are all professional athletes playing in the USL Championship. So they're all about as good as each other, especially because we don't have a standout, a superstar on this team that has been identified at this point. So I just think, you know, you need to construct the team from people who do not have their confidence easily shaken. That ship has sailed. And we need to get back to that mental strength. And sometimes that mental strength comes from these difficult periods. You know, tough periods, as cliched as it is, really do build character. And, you know, we know the schedule is going to get hard and harder in the coming weeks. I think it's time to remember who we are. We are the team that has done very successfully. We are the hard team on people's schedules. We're the team that scores a lot of goals. We're the team that historically protects their fortress. And I think we just need to pick our heads up and start acting like Phoenix Rising again.
And I think that's a great way to end this segment. Teo, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Kelly, it's great talking football with you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, stick around for the rest of the show. I hope you're listening with a friend. It's so much more fun when you do.
What's up, football-loving maniacs? This is Devin Kerr, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Next up is John Morrissey with his weekly segment on news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. John, it's great to have you back. How did things go in the USL Championship this week?
Hey, Niall. Very full week this time around. We had a lot of midweek action and a full weekend, so I'll dig right in. The really headliner of the midweek was Hartford getting a shocking 2-0 win over the Switchbacks. Colorado Springs obviously is one of the best teams in the West in the whole league. Hartford, meanwhile, was in their first game after firing Harry Watling. They had an interim manager. But Prince Sadie, former Phoenix player, did a really good job of stretching them out. And Hartford, again, just earned that victory. Elsewhere, San Antonio was on ESPN2, facing off against FC Tulsa. It was a tightly contested one. Tulsa looked a little bit better defensively, but ultimately San Antonio won 2-1 to maintain their lead atop the West. There was a really fun matchup the next day that saw Atlanta United win 4-3 against Charleston. Atlanta really was taking it to them offensively. The scoreline was a little bit friendly to the Battery. Tristan Traeger and Jackson Conway both had braces. Two young prospects who maybe someday could be firing like that in MLS. There was a scoreless Texan derby in the next matchup with El Paso and RGB drawing. El Paso was a little bit undermanned at the moment with injuries, the sale of Luna, obviously, Harry Bronkbank leaving. So it was a good performance of RGB, certainly, nonetheless. Then there was an eventful San Diego Loyal game to cap off the midweek. They beat Orange County 2-1, and that scoreline really belies the fact that the Loyal were dominant. The headliner there was Kyle Vassell and Longmire from Nashville getting into a full-fledged brawl. Vassell ended up tackling the new center back for Orange County. I believe it was 2 or 3 game suspensions for each of those players, but it really changed the game, and it was super fun to see. Orange County then added Dylan Powers, a midfielder with a lot of experience for Colorado in MLS. He was part of their title-winning side last year, and they just re-signed him months into the season now that they're deep down in the table, but still an interesting move nonetheless. Friday, Pittsburgh took on the New York Red Bulls 2. It was a dominant 3-0 win. Alex Dixon, Russell Cicerone were fantastic. Afterwards, the next day, New York fired their manager, Gary Lewis. This is a team that's been winless since week 2. I do think it's interesting that they're developmental by the statement of intent of that team. So you'd think they were hiring someone with the knowledge that, hey, maybe these results won't go our way. But I guess when you've gone that long without a win, maybe it is time for a change. Elsewhere, Colorado Springs rebounded really nicely with a crushing 3-0 win over Sacramento. Sacramento didn't have their full strength back three, but it was pretty much a first choice squad outside of that. And Haji Berry was delightful. He had a brace. Michi Galina was very good. A classic Switchbacks performance. Friday ended with LA Galaxy 2 really taking it to Oakland in a playoff bubble battle. They got 3 second half goals. Oakland had a red card after that point. Really ugly for the Roots, honestly, but it bumped the LA Galaxy up to 6th place in the West, even, and they've got 3 wins in 4. So moving on to the Saturday slate now, Tampa got a 2-0 win to start things off against Memphis 901. There was a matchup of the 2nd and 3rd best teams in the East. Jake LaCava had a brace in the first 20 minutes. Tampa's now won 4 out of 5. And boy, they are rolling. They have notably changed shapes into a back four after being really the leading proponent of the back three in the USL. That flexibility is going to pay dividends for them as they continue on. Another consequential game saw Miami go into Indianapolis to beat the 11 1-0. They also switched into a back four. Joaquin Rivas, the international for El Salvador that they signed last week, looked really good. Kyle Murphy got off the schneid with a goal. It was a really positive game for Miami, and it saw them leap over Indy for the last playoff spot in the East. Atlanta was at it again. They hosted El Paso and jumped to a 2-1 lead pretty early on in the game. They held on for a 2-2 draw, but it was no one's idea of the best locomotive performance. They ended up putting Ricardo Zacharias, who's an attacking midfielder by trade, at that right back spot because of the injuries, and he was just totally off the pace. So I think maybe that's something to watch for the locomotive in terms of transfers. I mean, it certainly would be if I was running the team, but elsewhere we saw Louisville down Birmingham 2-1. There was a late red card there and a somewhat controversial penalty that put Louisville over the top for the win. They've solidified themselves in first place in the East because of that result. One thing to note was the injury to Wilson Harris, maybe 60th minute or so. The striker has been really good for that team all year long, especially amidst Cameron Lancaster's struggles to really get fit. So that could be something to watch. There was an interconference game that saw San Antonio get a 2-0 win over Charleston. Kind of uneventful, exactly what you expect with those teams. The one thing for San Antonio certainly would be Matt Cardone retiring after 8 years with the club. He's a long-term goalkeeper, one of the best people in the USL. So sad to see him go, but on to bigger and better things, I'm sure. Elsewhere in the West, Monterrey drew 1-1 with New Mexico. That snapped a 4-loss streak for the expansion team, and it bumped New Mexico down to 7th in the thick of things on the bubble. Monterrey looked really good. Chase Boone, who's one of their bright rising stars, got a goal, a headed goal real early. So good game for them. A little bit poor for New Mexico, who's really slowed down after a hot streak. One more interconference game capped off Saturday night, and that saw Detroit get a 1-0 win in Las Vegas. Now, the Lights, because of their affiliate status with LA and MLS, didn't have Danny Trejo, didn't have Cal Jennings, and didn't have DeKal Keenan, who you could really argue are their three most important players. Nonetheless, Detroit really took it to them. It was their first win since May 21st, which is kind of crazy to think about, but certainly a really good game for them. Sunday, just one game on the cards, seeing Tulsa take on Loudoun in Virginia. Shortly before the game, Tulsa announced that Jorge Corrales, a Cuban international left back, was going to miss the rest of the year with an ACL injury. So, I mean, Tulsa just can't catch a break, really. And then Loudoun pretty much took it to them. They went up 2-0 pretty cleanly. There were some chances for Tulsa, certainly, but not what you want to see against a somewhat poor Loudoun side. But that's the slate of things for the week. Obviously, lots of fun, lots of headlines, and just happy to be talking about it here.
Well, it's always fun having you around, John. Thank you so much, and we look forward to hearing from you next week.
This is Bobby Dooley, General Manager of Phoenix Rising Football Club, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, next on the slate for Phoenix Rising is a trip to Tennessee to take on Memphis 901. Background: Memphis 901 was founded in 2018, made its debut in the USL Championship in 2019, and reached the playoffs for the first time last year in 2021. Former United States goalkeeper Tim Howard is one of the owners, and their head coach is Ben Pierman. Interestingly, before he moved to Tennessee, Pierman hung out in Michigan, where he coached Detroit City FC from 2013 to 2018. Into the 2022 season, Memphis lost two of their best players to Miami FC, Kyle Murphy and Mark Segbergs, but they added striker David Egbo. That's right, striker David Egbo, who spent time on the Phoenix Rising roster last season. Before we go any deeper, I need to extend huge thanks to Teo, John, and Kelly for being on the show, episode 63 of the Fan Experience of Phoenix Rising Supporters Podcast. Please share this podcast with a friend, like and retweet us on social media, and we'd really appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you in advance for that. Let's get back to that game preview, the game against Memphis 901. Memphis haven't done great in their last five games. They have 2 wins, 1 draw, and 2 losses. But overall in the season, they're doing great. In the Eastern Conference, they're second place, right between Louisville, who's in first, and Tampa Bay Rowdies, who are in third. Memphis 901 FC have 35 points on the season after 17 games. Phoenix Rising have 22 points after the same number of games. There's 7 teams that both Phoenix and Memphis have played this season. Memphis beat 4 of those, while Phoenix lost to that same 4. They were Las Vegas Lights, Tampa Bay Rowdies, Los Dos, and Loudoun United. Both Phoenix and Memphis played Birmingham Legion, and both teams lost to the Legion. Both Phoenix and Memphis played Hartford Athletic. Memphis drew, Phoenix won. And finally, Phoenix and Memphis, they played Miami FC. Memphis lost, but Phoenix won. Notable players on the Memphis roster include their captain, Leston Paul, center back, Niall Logue, formerly with Tucson FC, midfielder, Aaron Malloy, he leads the team with chances created, and striker, Philip Goodrum, he's got 9 goals this season. I mentioned the Phoenix Rising connection with David Egbo, but they have another connection to Rising. Jeremy Kelly, he was with us last year and had 5 appearances. Well, he's become a standout with Memphis 901. He's their assist leader, he's in their top 3 for goal scoring, and he's 2nd on the team for chances created. Both David Egbo and Jeremy Kelly are both on loan from MLS squads. The game against Memphis 901 in Memphis kicks off at 5:30 p.m. Phoenix time on Saturday, July the 9th. The match will be played in AutoZone Park. It's a baseball stadium, and you know the coach Rick Shantz is not going to be happy about that. Memphis have a 65% win streak. Ours, it's much lower. The odds are not in our favor, but if we go to Memphis and play the game that we all know that Phoenix can play, we will win. Join us again next week when we'll have USL lead analyst Devin Kerr with us to talk about the game. Reach out to Phoenix Rising players on social media and tell them how much you're behind them for this upcoming match. And right now, let everyone around you know where your heart lies. Join me for a Go Rising. Loud as you can, I'll count us in. 3, 2, 1, Go Rising!